You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
By the way, one of my friends texted me. They're listening at the beginning. There's no way they're listening now. They're listening at the beginning. I said, did you just say bleep? Did you just hint yourself with bleep? Why can't you do that at home?
With Joshua Briscoe.
Texted back and said, I don't bleep and want it.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to the show. Audio only. We're all scrambling back to our regularly scheduled chairs. And now we go into the Chiefs guest gauntlet that we're running through yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Because for as much as this may have snuck up on us, or as much as this feels like it may have dragged on, it's actually happening. Tomorrow is an actual Chiefs football game. Not preseason. Not training camp kicking off. Actual football against the reigning world champs. Talk about it now with Matt Connor. He's at Matt Connor AA on Twitter. He's the editor of Arrowhead Addict. Matt, I'm curious, does this offseason feel like it has dragged on? Or does it feel like this all kind of snuck up on you? Or is it somehow both?
Boy, it feels like both. It feels right? Like we've recycled. Yeah. Feels like we've recycled the same stories. I've defended the 100 times, you know, on basic stupid lists and predictions that drone on for forever. And yet I can't believe it's all, like, right here.
Right. It sounds like, are you talking through a blender currently? Is that an option? Is that, do you have tinfoil wrapped around your phone currently?
No, can you hear me okay?
This sounds okay now. I get afraid, Matt, whenever I think, oh no, the connection's not great. Maybe Charlie will have to act on his toes, because I know how that's going to end, which is going to end with Charlie doing exactly what he just did, which is him staring at his laptop, waiting for me to tell him what to do. But no, I agree with you, though, Matt. It does feel like it's been a little bit of both this offseason, because we've had so many good stories. We've had Patrick Mahomes get drafted. We've had John Dorsey get fired. Jeremy Maclin gets cut. Not in this order, obviously. And Jamaal Charles gets cut and goes to Denver. Like, there's been so much to talk about, but it also feels like this has been somehow an eternal offseason. But now we have an actual game to talk about. And so as we look ahead to the season as a whole, and then eventually to the game as a whole, I'm curious right now, how do you feel about this upcoming season as a whole? What is your pulse? What is your feel for this team right now?
I feel like we're looking at an 11-win team. I feel like the Chiefs are going to do what they've done every year, which is show enough holes that the most dismal in us, you know, we'll kind of roll our eyes heading into the playoffs, wondering if we can do this. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, like, we'll look up from these down moments and go, oh, yeah, wait, that was a great season. Like, I feel like that's what I've done every year with Andy.
Right. And, God, and so this is going to make us talk about Patrick Mahomes during the year, isn't it?
Yeah, there's just no way around talking about Patrick Mahomes and the shadow he's casting, even now. Before Alex Smith, you know, throws another screen pass on third and long or something
wait.
That's just going to make everyone so frustrated.
At some part of me feels like that's not fair to bring him up whenever that happens, as it's surely going to happen. And then part of me thinks, well, yeah, of course we're going to have that conversation, and justifiably so, because we're going to be infuriated by this offense. But I digress. On the offense, as we're talking about that side of the ball, I asked Pete Sweeney this. I asked Seth Kaiser this. I'm going to ask everybody this all week long. Who is the guy on this offense that you think is most important to the offense's long-term success?
Kareem Hunt. I just think...
Interesting.
I think the loss of Spencer Ware just puts so much on this rookie's shoulders. I mean, there's just no way... there's no denying the fact that if we're suddenly confronted with C.J. Spiller featured back or Shark Kendrick West featured back, we are screwed in every way. So I think Kareem Hunt just has to keep defenses honest. And the injury to Spencer Ware just threw any sort of training wheels like directly out the window, and it's all there from week one on the very biggest stage possible. So the guys jumping from Toledo to somewhere south of Super Bowl level platform.
That's really interesting. That's that. Pete said Tyreek Hill, and Seth said Travis Kelce. But it's interesting because I think all of you guys sort of made the argument for each of your pieces that that's the guy the offense is going to have to run through. And I think I hadn't even considered Kareem Hunt as the answer, but it makes a lot of sense because if you lift him off of this squad, like, what happens?
Yeah, the Chiefs have nothing. I can't believe, and I said this even today on Twitter, you know, Spencer Ware weighs in at 230. Mm-hmm. He's a bruiser of a back. And the early word on Kareem Hunt is, you know, he doesn't go down first thing. He plays heavier than he's listed. But all three running backs on the Chiefs right now on the active roster are about 25 pounds or more less than Spencer Ware. So there's absolutely no bruiser back kind of featured. And I was hoping there would be a play for one, you know, whether trade or free agency or waiver claim of some kind. And instead, we're just fairly light back there. And sorry if I'm not super high on C.J. Spiller, but I mean, you're talking about a reclamation project on one, a holdover that I could just care less about on another, and then Kareem Hunt.
Right.
And I just can't believe they're that thin.
No, that's really interesting. And in that conversation about getting yourself a thumper and dealing with short yardage situations, I kind of flashed back to a few times in the Jamaal Charles era where the Chiefs went and got Peyton Hillis. They went and got Thomas Jones. And whenever those guys were on the roster, from where I was watching at that point in my fandom, neither of those guys who were brought in to be short yardage running backs were ever the actual best short yardage running back on that team. It was always Jamaal Charles. You just didn't want to subject him to that kind of punishment constantly. So do you have any feeling that maybe Kareem Hunt will be able to carry that load?
Well, you know, look, guys whose jobs are on the line are believing in Kareem Hunt. And so maybe it's silly for me not to believe in him, you know, because there's really nothing at stake for me, you know, if he does well or not.
Sure.
So maybe in some ways we can trust the Chiefs brass that they've continued to made maneuvers in like their run defense, and they've left running back completely alone.
What about on the defensive side of the ball when you look for the guy that stands out to you as the man who will bring the biggest swing to the defense one way or another?
Gosh, that's a great question. I think it's gonna rise and fall in this early gauntlet because the schedule leans tough really early. So I think the early gauntlet is gonna be I think it's going to rise and fall on Eric Berry's heel. I'm really concerned. Like, it just felt like every week the Chiefs were like, well, we're just going to rest this for a little bit longer.
Yep.
And then, like, you can only do that so much until the regular season steps up and says, look, ready or not, you got to play. And so it'll be interesting to see just how healthy he looks or whether there's a little bit of nursing that injury as the game goes on. And as strong as that secondary is, and even as deep as they are at safety, you know, there's going to be a huge drop-off after Eric Berry on any roster. And he's certainly, you know, sort of the heart and soul of that defense.
With the injury concerns in the secondary being something that I know I've been talking and thinking about a lot over these last couple of weeks, how are you feeling about Terrence Mitchell losing Steven Nelson and also Ron Parker showing up on the injury report this week?
Yeah, you know, fortunately Ron Parker was a full participant in practice. You know, I think he's going to be okay, or you know, at least should be good to go. We'll see how that looks. I hate the loss of Nelson. I mean, that guy plays so much bigger than he's listed. He can play outside, even though everyone wants to say he's only a slot guy. Like, I just think he's a fine performer, and he's really kind of coming into his own. But, you know, like, they're blowing a lot of smoke about Phillip Gaines and the confidence they have. You know, Brett Veach came out really confident in him.
Right.
I don't think they'd talk him up unless unless that was a real thing. And don't forget, Gaines is in a contract year, so he's got a big payday to play for if he can prove he's healthy and actually show what he can do on the field.
So tell me if I have a revisionist memory here, but didn't Philip Gaines have some time back before his injury where we all thought he could at least step in that slot corner spot?
Yeah, absolutely. Gaines has flashed on the field before, for sure. He's made some rookie mistakes, maybe even when he's not a rookie. But he's also been dealing with nagging injuries, and then those things knocked him down the depth chart. I think they would have made a move. The Chiefs were in prime draft position in a very deep draft class to take a cornerback early on if they really wanted. And they passed over some really big, some good names who could have probably stepped in and just locked down that number two slot instead of taking, maybe other guys in the second and third round. So the fact that they passed over them kind of showed me they liked what they had in-house enough to enter the regular season with it.
Whenever you look at this team now with the sort of the wide view, what do you see being the biggest strength and the biggest weakness of the Chiefs right now?
Well, I just think the uncertainty surrounding the youth and inexperience at your skill positions on offense are going to be big. So does Alex Smith have any timing or chemistry issues with the young receivers or with Kareem Hunt? I think that's going to be big. You mentioned the secondary and health and depth issues. They've got to shake themselves out. I'm anxious to see who can step up as returner when it's not just the preseason, because, we've had D'Anthony Thomas for years. It's kind of weird to suddenly get excited about that now when we weren't that excited about it in 2016, 2015. So, I think those are some areas. But when you compare that to other teams, even including the Patriots for that matter, the Chiefs are actually sitting pretty in terms of holes on the roster.
Yeah. So what do you think then? Again, we'll talk about the Patriots here in just a second. But with the season as a whole, what do you think their final record ends up being? You mentioned 11 wins earlier. Is that what you're going with?
Yeah, I'd probably guess 11 wins, and I think we'll see the majority of those in the second half of the season.
And what about the AFC West at the end of the year? How will we look at the standings there?
I'm not buying the hype on the Raiders at all. I think they're a 500 team. I think the Broncos are better than what everyone is saying. I mean, that's a defense that won a Super Bowl just 2 years ago with most of those parts. So I think they're, I think they're your second place team, and I think Raiders are probably a third place team. It's just hard to pick the Chargers to do anything but do what the Chargers have done when they're just so cursed. I almost feel bad for a rival fan base.
I do.
I don't know about you.
Yeah, I do. I feel bad for Philip Rivers. He is such a better quarterback than anyone's ever gotten to see him actually be.
Yeah, and the worst part of that is he's always played in San Diego.
He's never
had the fan base. Right. He's never had the media coverage. He's always playing his games hours after people go to bed or take their Sunday nap.
Right.
He really should be enjoying a fine year this year with all kinds of targets. Instead, they're all laying around like I will be on Sundays.
All right, let's move ahead to tomorrow's game. Bob Sutton had a little clip that I've played a bunch so far yesterday, and I guess just yesterday. I played a bunch yesterday, and I've made fun of this plenty, so I'll give Bob Sutton a break. But he said something about how Tom Brady can you can only show Tom Brady so much. There's nothing that Tom Brady hasn't seen. If you were the defensive coordinator of this team, what would you be trying to do to slow down Tom Brady?
Gosh, I mean, I can't give you anything that Bob Sutton isn't going to give you.
Well, if that makes you feel any better, you guys are both on the same page then. Neither of you can give anything.
I think Therese Paylor came out with a great column today about what the Chiefs are going to have to do and do their best to disrupt, to do their best to get at him. Like Justin Houston said, you just have to hit him. Mm-hmm. I think if they can make him a little bit nervous, that would be great, and they have the personnel to do it. I think this front seven, even without Tamba Hali, is the best the Chiefs have had in years.
Agreed.
So, yeah, I think they're capable of it, for sure. I think they're very capable of not only upsetting the Patriots. I hate to even say that because that sounds like college rankings or something. And not just upsetting them, but I think like establishing themselves on the national radar from week one.
That was something we talked about yesterday a little bit of, as how much the perception of the Chiefs would change if they won this game tomorrow. And it's astronomical. They would go from being, you know, a team that's in the conversation in that second or third tier of the AFC to being a team that was perceived as an actual Super Bowl contender, right?
Huge, huge. There's no way to undersell this game. It's the first of so many primetime games. It is against the defending champs on the road. I mean, everything is built in for the NFL films that we're all going to order at the end of the season,
right.
You know, that documentary or something, right, of just how magical the season could be if they were able to pull this off.
Does that maybe make you feel a little bit better about the Chiefs' side of this game? Maybe the Chiefs are feeling the importance of it a little more than the Patriots are, because the Patriots could go out there and lose this game 42-0 and still be the Vegas odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl this year. Does that maybe give the Chiefs an advantage, or is that something that's just invented by fans who need a reason to think the Chiefs can win?
Well, I do think the Chiefs can win. I do think the Chiefs know how big this is. I also would never put anything past, you know, Bill Belichick,
yeah,
and Tom Brady in terms of them not taking something seriously.
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they talk about several more years, but they're in a really weird position with Jimmy Garoppolo. They did not train. It wouldn't surprise me if there's been some knowledge behind the scenes that this could be Brady's last go around.
Oh, please.
So there's a part of me kind of wondering that, you know, in terms of like rolling out one more year. I mean, of course we all hope that, but at the end of the, I mean, we say that about Tom Brady, and we can hate on Tom Brady, but at the end of the day, we're going to be telling our kids we watch Tom Brady.
Of course. All right, so if the Chiefs do win on Thursday, what will be the thing that we're talking about on Friday as why the Chiefs ended up winning that game?
It's got to be the defense, and it's got to be the defense's transition from the bend but don't break philosophy that they showed last winter against the Steelers. To an actual aggressive defense that didn't allow them to move the chains before they decided to sort of step up and stop them. So, I think Bob Sutton, you know, again, that front seven, they have the weapons to get really aggressive and maybe not just like wait for New England to make a mistake, because that's never going to happen.
Right.
But if you can force a mistake, I think that's what we'll be talking about, is a sort of newfound aggressiveness on the defense.
Which makes me think that you don't have much faith in the offense being the reason they win this game. Is that your biggest concern as well? Is that the place where you see this falling the most flat?
Yeah, I have a hard time. I love Tyreek Hill. I love his potential. I think he's capable of quite a bit. And at the same time, you know, I think the question marks are there in the youth and inexperience of the overall skill positions that, you know, that they didn't do anything behind Travis Kelce in terms of tight end either, with just so many issues with drops last year. I think it's got to be defense or not at all.
All right. So what do you think it winds up being? If I say, give me a score, what would you give me?
I'll be a homer. I'll say Chiefs 24, Patriots 17.
So you feel pretty good then about the defense actually being able to take that jump forward?
Yeah, let's do it. Why not? What's at stake?
Your pride. Also, whoever is the farthest off of on these predictions, I never speak to again. I should have told you that ahead of time. Maybe you would have realized how serious this is. How seriously I'm taking it.
I mean, Patriots 50, Chiefs 0.
Matt, I appreciate it. Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict. He's at Matt Connor AA on Twitter. Always good to catch up with you. Thanks for the time.
Josh, thanks so much.
All right, we got a Chiefs pick. Two Patriots, one Chiefs in our three picks we've had so far. I agree with him. The front seven is going to be where this game is made or broken.
that isn't off the tongue quite as well as make it or break it. But that's where this game is going to be decided if the Chiefs do end up pulling through. I also like the idea that the importance of I like the stress on moving from the bend but don't break philosophy to being aggressive and being able to jump a few routes that if you miss will break your defense. But those are shots you have to take against the Patriots. I'm totally cool with the Chiefs playing a bend-don't-break defense against everybody except for the Patriots and the Steelers. If there's a place when they need to roll out the red carpet and make sure that the opposing quarterback is meeting them head-on, it's going to be with Brady and with Roethlisberger. I'd also like to see some more man coverage in there, but Bob Sutton's not going to do that. All right, we're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, we will we're going to talk about the Chiefs and Patriots. They play tomorrow, man. Of course we're going to talk about the Chiefs and Patriots.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
If you call the football the Duke, are you a D-bag?
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Welcome back to the show. Do you see what Jason Whitlock did? Twice? I remember that I wanted to get this audio clip and I forgot to download it, so I'm gonna literally play you something from my phone speaker into my microphone. Charlie, good luck managing this one. This is Jason Whitlock from what Speak for Yourself, the FS1 show. He's talking about Colin Kaepernick because that's what he does now professionally. People keep allowing him to do that. Listen to Jason Whitlock's theory here really quick. Again, played off of my phone because I didn't plan ahead for this one.
Kaepernick's being used to attack the NFL and to paint the NFL as racist. The people that are using him to do that, and he's now in on it, aren't going to let this go. People are out to get football in the NFL, and I keep trying to tell people, black people are too successful in football, and these liberals want to put a stop to that, and they're not going to give up on the Kaepernick story.
Excuse me. And what now? Oh, excuse me. All right, so to recap, Jason Whitlock says that Colin Kaepernick, the story, is a part of a conspiracy by liberals to take down the NFL because within the NFL, black people have gotten too successful. Also, Jason Whitlock has a picture on his Twitter of him in an apron holding a football next to a white guy in a fake afro and a beard in a Colin Kaepernick jersey holding his hand up with a black glove on it. Jason Whitlock, you do not get to make those kinds of calls anymore.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I'm not calling for Alex Smith to get shipped out of town.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I will carry Alex Smith to the airport on my back like a koala.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the show. Got a tweet on Twitter where tweets are held. It said at JB Briscoe. That's me. You can tweet me there at JB Briscoe. You might be the most annoying radio host I've ever heard. You're lucky KC has very few other options for Chiefs coverage. Thank you for listening. Thank you for giving the show a chance. That's all I've ever asked for. Now, scurry along. This isn't for you, clearly. That's okay. Unless you're just, like, so desperate for the fix. For the Chiefs fix. Like, well, I guess we'll suffer through his annoying voice and topics and self-involvedness and everything else about him. That's the tweet I just got. And now, as Nick Jacobs joins the show, he's at Jacob71. I'd like to ask you now, Nick, why did you tweet me that? That is very rude of you.
I would never, ever tweet you that. I am a professional, Josh. I would never tweet you that, ever.
Not from your main account? No. This, very clearly, a poorly... Oh, he says he's suffering through. He's still listening. Thank you for still listening. He's still tweeting me. I'm looking at this, and it appears to be just a badly photoshopped picture of you with different glasses. That's my theory right now.
Hey, I had people make three accounts of me a week or two ago, and then just tweet me stuff that apparently I had a wife, even though I'd never been married, and other hateful things. So
it's fantastic.
I don't have the time. I'm busy watching Coach's film or spending time with my nieces. I just don't have the time to put that kind of energy into stuff, man. Too much hate in the world. I don't have time for it.
Listen, now that you're here on this show, hopefully we can make this guy's life better as he is suffering and still listening, as he is confirmed now. Maybe you can save this show, because it's obviously not going to be me.
It will be you. I believe in you.
Thank you. It's nice to have that balanced out. All right, so in case anybody just had missed this so far, the Chiefs have a football game tomorrow, an actual real-life football game that counts, where Alex Smith will be starting. So, you know, good and bad news. It's all out there. But I'm curious, Nick, before we get down to the specific questions, and I've been asking a lot of the same questions to a few of you guys over the last couple of days, and I'll continue to do that today and tomorrow, because I'm curious what the consensus ends up being. But before we get to those sort of, like, search for the consensus questions, where are you at with the Chiefs as a whole right now?
I have some concerns along the way. If this Akeem Hunt thing ends up, if they were officially announced that he's on the practice squad, then that eases one of my concerns about speed at running back. That could also be quality depth and fit the Andy Reid system and kind of fill some of Jamaal Charles' role. Receiver, I'm still curious to see who's going to step up, and tomorrow is going to be a great answer on that one. Mm-hmm. I'm still concerned at tight end and who can actually block at tight end. And, I mean, I'm still concerned about the interior guard positions and how they'll do against the Patriots and cornerback depth. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that they'll be able to ring the bell and answer, hopefully, tomorrow. And if not, then they're going to be even bigger concerns.
Which direction are you moving on most of those concerns? Are you more optimistic about most of them being maybe overblown? Are you pessimistic and worrying about a few of them being the kind of thing that will lose you a game or two along the way?
I would say I'm a pessimistic person.
Yeah, same.
After watching the Chiefs for so many years, yeah. So I've learned when I get excited for a game that they get blown out. So I try to keep it like a low level right now, so I can be like, oh, okay, great, that's fantastic.
Sure. I'm with you, but I also would like to find reason to be optimistic. Part of it right now, currently in front of me on NFL Network, they're showing highlights of Tyreek Hill. That makes me feel a little bit better. But it leads me to one of those pesky specific questions where I've gotten the different answer from everyone so far. Who do you think is the most important player on this offense this year?
Well, I'm going to go with Alex Smith.
All right, four different answers.
That what Alex Smith does is going to decide a lot on this team if he's willing to stand in that pocket. And, I mean, the offensive line you could add as a piece of that. Because, in a way, if the offensive line can get the run game going, then you can give Alex a clean pocket. I mean, then Alex can hopefully reach his capability, although people would disagree on his capability. But as you and I talked about before, when he had that veteran offensive line in 2013 against the Colts in the playoff game, that was one of his best performances,
right?
Because he felt comfortable and he trusted that line.
Right.
And if he has that, then he can perform to his best, and that's one less worry he has, and he can go through all his progression. So, I mean, for me, I think it's kind of a blend of Alex Smith and the offensive line, but at the end of the day, Alex Smith is going to be the one who gets the attention, and he's going to be the one who's going to help decide where this team does or doesn't go.
I think that you have plenty of reason to say that it's going to come down to how much he trusts his offensive line. How much do you trust the Chiefs' offensive line?
I trust the tackles. I think Eric Fisher has come a long way, and I've documented over history the progressions he's taken. So he's actually become a quality offensive tackle. Mitchell Schwartz, I never have a worry about. Mitch Morris does a good job, but I think he'd be a much better guard than he is center, because he struggles with nose tackles, getting up under his pads and collapsing the pocket on him a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then Duvernay still has a lot of flaws that get me uneasy at times. And then Brian Weissman's done a good job for being put in the position he is, because he was a swing tackle last year. And he's done the best he can, but once they put Parker Anger back in there, I'll feel better about that line.
Yeah,
and there's some stuff if Duvernay improves on this year, then I'll feel much better about the line.
And it seems like right now, it seems like the Parker Anger issue is still just him getting back from injury, not that he was necessarily beaten out by Witsman. So that's encouraging. What about on the defensive side of the ball? If you have to identify one player who's going to determine the fate of this defense more than the rest of them, the most important guy from that side.
Well, there's two guys that I think it's going to decide a lot on. One of them is going to be the health of Terrence Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is going to be, can D Ford rush from the right side like he did from the left side last year? I think those are two of the bigger ones that are going to decide the fate of how this defense can or can't, what they can and can't do.
So help me understand this, because this is a question, and everybody listening now, all these people who hate the show who just can't turn it off.
I love the show.
Thank you, Nick.
I listened to it when I went to the grocery store a little while ago.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I have a little folder of, this is very, very inside, but I have a little folder of tweets that I will save of people tweeting about the show, and I just have a smattering of, like, this show is great, and I love this show. And then also, this is the most annoying show I've ever heard. And eventually, I think I want to just get, like, I want to hire a grandma to get to knit me a quilt that, I guess not knit. I want a little patchwork quilt that has each of these tweets on it. And then so at night, I can wrap myself in that blanket of both, like, reassuring feelings and also insecurities. And also, it needs to be able to wipe up tears.
But it's not insecurities, because they're trying to, in their minds, they're trying to force you to get better.
Ooh, wow, I hadn't even thought about that.
Maybe
that's what my dad tweets all those mean things to me about the show.
Really, it's possible, man. He really just wants to see the best of you.
Really opens my eyes up. So help us understand here, the dynamics of a linebacker, an edge rusher, switching sides of the defense. And maybe there's a reason why D Ford is better from the left side than he's been from the right?
Yeah, I would say, if I remember correctly, in college, I remember him at Florida State being on the left side a little bit more. And the way I can equate it for people listening is, imagine you ate with your left hand for 15, 20 years.
Right.
And then you break that hand, and then you have to use your right hand now. And then it feels weird and different. You just don't have experience with it. But if you want to eat food or be productive in anything, you have to get comfortable with it. So it's just like, you know, just like in football, you gotta take the reps and just get comfortable with it and get to the point where you have muscle memory to where you're used to doing the moves in that way and using the opposite hand, and then just, you know, using the opposite hand for some of the rush moves and then having the bull rush this way or take this angle a little bit wider this way. It's going to take a little time, but the biggest thing of all, and this is where he's going to decide where his career goes this year, is he's going to be going up against the team's best offensive lineman, hopefully, right, every single week at left tackle, because you want to put your most athletic and one of your more powerful tackles always at left tackle.
Right. So you touched on this in both of these sections already, but does it seem like more of a technical and a comfort thing for D Ford, or does it seem like it's more of him being physically overpowered or just physically dealt with more often by the superior offensive lineman, or is it truly a little bit of both?
I would say in some regards it's probably it's a little bit of both, but in terms of that second part, though, in my opinion, that's where it comes down to desire. Either you want to be the best in the game or you don't. Justin Houston wants to be the best in the game. Tom Mahaly wants to be the best in the game. They may have their limitations, but if you've ever watched those guys over the years out on the field, they put in the work to try to become the best at their position.
Right.
And that's where like Eric Fisher's gotten better, and every single player that you've seen improve over the years, even Tyreek Hill, they want to be the best at their spot. Mm-hmm. So either you want it or you don't. And if you don't, you're normally out of the league in 4 to 5 years.
Let's stay within the position group, but go to the newest member of it. Tano Passanio's gotten more and more work as an outside linebacker, and it makes sense now also that Tom Bahaly starts the season on the PUP list, and Daddy Nicholas also, I keep mixing up where Daddy Nicholas is. He's also on the PUP list right now, right?
He is, because that injury he had last year against the Chargers was nasty, the way that leg bent back.
So with both of those guys on the PUP list now, the Chiefs actually have some room for kind of a growth outside linebacker, a growth edge rusher. I don't want to say a project necessarily, but a guy who definitely isn't where he's going to end up being. What do you think whenever you watch Tano Passanio as a pass rusher, as a guy who's learning that outside linebacker edge spot?
I think he has the power that they want. Mm-hmm. I think he has the athletic ability they want. And for me personally right now, I think long-term, well, short-term, he's insurance for Tamba not being available right now. Mm-hmm. And long-term, he could be Houston's replacement down the road if he reaches where they're probably hoping ceiling-wise, to where he's that stout run defender a couple years down the road, because right. Justin wasn't immediately. It took Justin a couple years to get to that point.
Right.
So I think that's kind of what they're envisioning with him. I personally think, because I know he's about 289 right now, mm-hmm. I honestly think if he got down to 270, I think his quickness would go up a notch in another year in their strength training system. Like, I think they got some serious promise there if that's where they want to put him, because 289-pound guys should not be able to cover running backs or fullbacks or tight ends out of the backfield the way he does.
Talking to Nick Jacobs, he's on Twitter at Jacob71. He's one of the few guys that I trust to talk about the offensive line and the offensive line play and the front seven play and everything, so we're going to keep doing a little bit of that here today. The front seven, something we've talked about all over the place. We've talked about it, I would say, a justified amount, which is a ton. And you and I have also specifically spoken about it plenty. But I want to get kind of a last check-in for where you're at for that inside linebacker position as the season is just a day away. We know Reggie Ragland isn't going to be playing tomorrow. I think he said recently that he's hoping to be back in about a month. But so with everything that we know about that inside linebacker spot, both for tomorrow and for the future as in this year and for the future as in maybe 3 years from now, what are you seeing in those spots?
Well, I would say for short-term purposes, Ramik is going to – he needs to avoid the cut block. That's the biggest problem he has right now. He's become more aggressive this year. Hmm. He's done better at getting off blocks. Cut block is the last thing. He needs to take off that checklist, and then he's where he needs to be in terms of run support. And I feel a lot more comfortable with the growth he's had. In coverage, I think that's where the Patriots may expose them a little bit with their running backs if they can manipulate that tomorrow night. But the backup behind them with Oligwe mm-hmm. and Pierre Lewis for at least tomorrow, like those guys athletically, they can go out and cover without a problem right now. And those guys, they give the Chiefs some of the best depth I think they've had in terms of potential growth and athletic ability at linebacker and then on special teams. And then when you're looking at the long term, Ragland, whenever he's comfortable, when the knee's healthy, when he knows the playbook, I think he replaces Ramik Wilson, and then he becomes your thumper. And then and that allows Ramik to either be depth or whatever they decide to do in that regard. But I think Brett Veach has done a good job of attacking that weakness, putting a lot of promise in there for them to develop.
So looking ahead now to tomorrow specifically, do you expect then to see maybe a little more Kimi Ligwe, a little more Kevin Pierre-Lewis than you would expect, and that being at the loss of Ramik Wilson snaps for tomorrow specifically, as you try to just keep the Patriots on the ground a little more often?
Yeah, when I looked at the tape, because I looked at 14 and then I looked at their playoff game in 15, mm-hmm. when Bob Sutton was more successful against Brady, because he had a better offensive line that year too, was the 14 Monday Night Football game. They ran a five-man front. Tamba and Houston were in wide nines. Bailey and Howard did three tech and five tech, depending on the formation of the back and tight end.
Right.
And then Poe was in the zero tech.
Right.
And then they had Josh Maga and James Michael Johnson out there, and then they would move in Abdullah at times in there. And I think tomorrow, if they get in some of those passing situations, I would put Pierre Lewis in for Ramik and let Pierre Lewis and his natural ability of coverage not expose them from that formation, but give them the best overall of what they need. But in some of the goal line situations and obvious run situations when they have double tights, I would definitely put Ramik in there. Mm-hmm. And I think they have ability. I think they have balance and fluidity to where they can be effective with it, especially with that front, with the defensive line too. Sutton can rotate all them in and run that five-man front, and I think they could do some damage to the Patriots.
How successful do you think that rotation will be? Because I agree, the rotation across that defensive line and the different ways that they can use, you know, all of the different weapons that they have, it gives me some optimism. But I also remember what happens whenever Tom Brady gets pressured. He usually gets rid of the ball before much of anything gets to him. How do you see that panning out with what you know about the Patriots' offensive line?
Well, the Patriots' offensive line is good, so I'm not going to discount that. And there's going to be times where Brady's going to make them pay. But the thing is, they can disguise some of their twists, some of their games, some of the overload blitzes they may bring, they can actually disguise those better in that five-man front than they could in the four-man front that they ran in the playoff game in 2015. Hmm. And in the playoff game in 2015, they were so tired and gassed by that fourth quarter that they barely had anything left at halftime. And this year they have a much better rotation to where they can take some series to Rakeem Nunez, Rochas comes in there, whether it's a four or five-man front. I think with the four-man front, I think they're going to get tired quicker, and I think it's a lot more ground to cover. And that nose tackle collapsing the center into Brady is really, really important.
I think that's undeniable. Let's backpedal just a little bit back to the season as a whole. I wanted to see what you think the Chiefs will end at record-wise and how you think the AFC West will pan out.
Yeah, when I put it on Twitter the other day, I had the Chiefs at 12-4 with their losses coming to the Patriots, the Steelers, the Raiders on Thursday night, because they're going to play the Texans and Steelers, two physical defenses and teams back-to-back, then have to travel to Oakland and play the Raiders on that Thursday night game.
Yeah.
Just like they did in 2014 when the Raiders hadn't won a game yet, and it was Carr's rookie year, mm-hmm. and the Chiefs played the Bills and the Seahawks back-to-back, then flew to Oakland for a Thursday night game. The Chiefs were they were in a daze for almost three and a half quarters, yeah. and then Oakland snuck up on them and got their first win of the year.
Yeah.
When the Chiefs were a much better team, and if the Chiefs won that, they may have actually been in the playoffs that year, because there was like four or five different losses that had they won, they actually probably would have gotten in the playoffs, mm-hmm. and it would have been four consecutive years instead of three or four. So that's another game I have left. In the Cowboys game, I think it's going to be interesting with that Cowboys offensive line and Dak Prescott down the road.
And what
so I got them at 12-4.
So then I'm assuming that gives them the AFC West in your mind?
Yeah, I had the Patriots as the one seed at 14-2. I had the Steelers at 2 at 13-3. I had the Chiefs at 3 at 12-4. The fourth seed, I put the Titans. The fifth seed, I had the Chargers. And then the sixth seed, I had... I think I had the Ravens, because it's John Harbaugh's head coaching job potentially on the line if they don't win.
So you have the Chargers then as the second best team in the AFC West.
Yeah, and the only reason I have that is because I watched their front seven and the way Gus Bradley's using them this year.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as they avoid injuries, they have Ken Whisenhunt back as their coordinator. Their head coach, Anthony Lynn, is going to help make that run game better. And then Gus Bradley has that defense much more disciplined. And that front seven is really fun to watch from a speed perspective. And then when I watched the Raiders defense, they looked more lost than they did last year, which I didn't think was possible.
Hmm.
But they don't seem to know who's covering who or who's doing what. They have so many blown coverages. They have no pressure at defensive tackle. It's just Khalil Mack and Bruce Irving hopefully getting to the quarterback before they get exposed elsewhere on the football field. So I think the Raiders are going to be one of those teams that is going to have to outscore every team that they play. And if they don't, then the defense is going to give it up, and then they're going to lose the game. So AFC West-wise, yeah, I had the Chiefs at 1, the Chargers at 2, at 10-6. I had the Raiders at 9-7, and I had the Broncos at 7-9.
You talked a lot there about how the different coaches impact the units that they're fixing. This isn't a conversation we have very often, but what do you think the impact of coaches in the NFL, both at position levels and head coaches across the board, what kind of impact do those guys actually have on your week-to-week basis and with your development of an entire team?
I think, for me personally, I think if you have a good coach like Andy Reid, I think that you can be pretty successful. And the Chiefs actually have a lot of good position coaches, like Brent Reed on the Chiefs defensive line, one of the better D-line coaches, and he's a rising star.
Hmm.
And then Eric Bieniemy, the running backs coach, I think that guy's going to be a head coach someday. And those positions are typically two of the Chiefs' strengths for the past 4 years. I would say the Broncos, that's where them losing Wade Phillips this year, I think you're going to notice.
Hmm.
Because Wade Phillips always told them, from players I talked to, that you treat every play like you're playing in the championship game for the Super Bowl. Like, this is your championship. And they made them play like their hair was on fire every single play.
Mm-hmm.
And they played like every play was their last. And that's why that Denver defense won a Super Bowl, because they were so dominant. And if you look at Jack Del Rio's team, they kind of they lose focus at times, and then they have miscommunications, they have missed assignments, and the same thing happened when Del Rio was down in Jacksonville, and that just kind of seems kind of who he is. So I think the head coach creates the mentality and the identity of the football team, and then I think depending the competency of your coordinator, that decides how well you can out-scheme your opponent and hide your weaknesses and deficiencies.
That's interesting. And also, you mentioned that you think Britt Reid is a rising star, son of Andy Reid. I've heard a couple of people, and I'm not just not naming names. I can't remember who said this, but a couple of times that Britt Reid has come up, and I've mentioned what he said about Tano Passanio, and I thought it was really interesting. And I cannot remember who it was that said this. Not that I would say if I could, but it's bothering me personally. I could give a bleep what Britt Reid says. It's interesting to hear you say that you think that he's actually a rising star coming from this Chiefs staff. That's interesting to me.
Well, I've gotten the chances to talk to him over the years and kind of pick his brain on some stuff. And just the way I've watched him coach over the years and how the discipline that he's had with some of those guys and how the players have responded to him. Mm-hmm. He has a lot to work with there athletically. And sometimes that's the hardest, but mm-hmm. he makes them so technically sound as defensive linemen that it's impressive to watch and watch the rise that they have.
Here's a very different and frankly kind of mean-spirited question because it becomes a quarterback discussion. Mm-hmm. But I don't even remember what this came out of. This was just a very naturally arising question. But what are you more excited for right now? The first game of the season coming tomorrow. What are you more excited for, the 2017 season or the 2018 season?
For me personally, just on tomorrow's aspect, mm-hmm. I want to see where this roster is and isn't in terms of the championship level.
Okay.
How close are you to making to that AFC Championship game? Because mm-hmm. the Royals have already done their part, and they already won the AL twice, and they've been to the World Series twice, and they won a World Series.
Right.
So now you're across the parking lot, and everybody in this town is waiting on you to be able to counter that. Yeah, you've been to the playoffs three out of four seasons. Mm-hmm. Now can you take that next step? Because that's the problem right now, is the way the national media sees you is that they see you as it's the Patriots, the Steelers, the Raiders, and then the Chiefs.
Right.
Despite the fact that the Chiefs have beaten the Raiders nonstop.
Right.
It's just they all like Derek Carr's flash and Tom Brady's experience and Ben Roethlisberger's experience over Alex Smith. So, and that kind of ties into your 2018 to where, Pat Mahomes, if he shows what they want down the road there in 2018 or 19, then maybe that conversation changes. But, I'd say right now I want to know tomorrow night where this team is at, how do they compare to the defending Super Bowl champions and who's still considered the top of the AFC class.
I'm with you on that. I think that's a good way to look at it. I also, you say, you know, the national perspective is more interested in the shine of Derek Carr and the experience of Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger. And you say all that, and I just sort of like go, like, yeah, that's the right way to look at it. Like, that makes, of course you would be. Of course Derek Carr is more interesting than Alex Smith is. Of course that's a more fun story from a national perspective. How could I fault him on that? So That's neither here nor there, though, I suppose. All right, so I'm now curious, if the Chiefs win tomorrow night, what will be the reason?
Well, I wrote an article on it earlier today, so there was 5 points in there, but the Chiefs, they can't have three and outs on offense. Mm-hmm. They cannot let the Patriots go into no huddle, because the Patriots like to go into no huddle if they have an explosive play or if an opposing team goes three and out, because they want you to be gassed by the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing on offense, just to sum it down, is that the teams are going to try to take away Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce tomorrow night. Because in 2014, the Patriots took away Jamaal Charles and Travis Kelce exploded. Yep. Then in 2015, they took away Kelce with the bracket coverage because there was nobody else speed-wise at receiver. So Avant and Wilson had to step up at times, but not consistently enough mm-hmm. in terms of Wilson and some of the other guys. Mm-hmm. So tomorrow night, I think they're going to roll a safety over on Tyreek to take away that deep ball. And then I think they're going to have doubles on Tyreek at times, depending on the formation and situation. And then I think they're going to bracket Kelce, and they're going to say, okay, the rest of your offense, try to beat us. And, oh, hey, Alex, try to throw that deep ball. We're taking Tyreek away, so try to throw that deep ball in contested coverage against somebody else.
And then how do you think the Chiefs will respond to that threat?
That is the thing that I am most curious about tomorrow night because I have no idea. Because I told you, if I get too excited and think they can do it, then I'm sad for like the next week. They got blown out.
I understand that wholeheartedly. I do. I will also be sad for the next week if I get buying into this by tomorrow night. But I need a score, Nick. I need a score prediction.
Right. Yep. What I will do is I'm going to take the last time they played on national TV against the Denver Broncos in week two of 2015 when the Broncos won the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I got the Patriots 31-24 right now. I think the Chiefs are going to come in, and I am hoping they're playing a close game, and I think they'll have that rah-rah moment. But at the end, until they prove it to me, I don't expect them to get over that hump.
I appreciate you bringing your pessimism up to the forefront so we can continue to hope that maybe you will have the fortune of being wrong. Nick, as always, I appreciate it.
I want to. Now, and I want to know, how's that guy doing on Twitter right now?
Let's check in.
All right, I want an update. I'll listen off air.
Okay, perfect. I'll bring the update on the Twitter guy next, and we'll also end up talking to Matt Verderam. We've got so much to cover next segment. Thank you, Nick.
All right, thanks.
Nick Jacobs, you can follow him on Twitter at Jacobs71.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I am saying that Patrick Mahomes is Aaron Rodgers.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Patrick Mahomes is Aaron Rodgers.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports. My name is Joshua Briscoe. I might be the most annoying radio host in Kansas City. And I am lucky. Kansas City has very few other options for Chiefs coverage. That's according to the guy on Twitter who I mentioned earlier. Update, he says, I'm not lazy and I engage with many different types of sources for your Chiefs takes. That's more than I can say for most of the national pundits. My purpose is not to hurt anyone's feelings or tear anyone down. You're as good as your next take, as are any media personalities. So I might be the most annoying radio personality in town, but at least he's not trying to tear me down or hurt my feelings. How do you get to that point? And I tweeted him back, and I said, I can live with that, and I genuinely appreciated him finding this show and giving it a chance. But how does somebody tweet something like that, and then, like, 30 minutes later, is like, hey, by the way, not trying to hurt your feelings.
No offense, but...
Exactly! No offense, but God,
you suck,
and so does your show. Matt Verderam now joining us. Matt, why is your alternate Twitter account so mean to me?
I felt like you needed the honesty.
You know what? Frankly, I do. Talking to Matt Verderam, his actual Twitter account where he doesn't just tweet mean things to me is at Matt Verderam. He's the NFL lead writer for FanSided. He has the Stacking the Box podcast, and he has put his life savings on the Jets under 4.5 wins. Correct? Did you ever make that happen?
Yes. In fact, I'm looking to try to get a second job right before the season starts so I can put some more money on that bet.
It's the most insane thing I've ever seen. Although the Bills trying to tank as hard as they currently are making me a little bit nervous just because they're going to get two shots. But even then, like Josh McCown is starting the season. Oh, God.
I mean, let's say the Jets and the Bills split those two games.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say the Jets beat Jacksonville at home. Who else are they beating all year long?
They have no shot. The Browns look decent. Like they look a decent actual NFL football team. Yeah,
like, Cleveland's got to win a game or two. I mean, Cleveland's going to win more games than they won last year. So even if Cleveland's 4-12, like even Browns fans are looking at that game and going, "That's one.
Right.
That's going in the win column."
Right. All right, let's talk about the Chiefs because I guess that's the point of a local radio show. I cannot get enough of the Jets 4.5 win total. Very broadly here at the front end, I'm curious from your perspective, and you are of everyone we've talked to this week, you're the guy who has the best feel for the rest of the NFL and where the Chiefs fit in the context of that. So with that being said, where do the Chiefs fit in the context of the rest of the NFL for you?
Certainly a top 10 team. I think most national guys and gals would agree with that. I think, you know, to me, in my own personal opinion, they're a top three AFC team. New England's clearly the best team.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you have to give Pittsburgh the edge over Kansas City until Chiefs prove they can beat them in a meaningful spot.
Right.
But I think the Chiefs and the Steelers are the only two teams that would have a chance of beating New England in January. I don't think Oakland can do it because I don't like their defense at all. I think Tennessee, it's probably a year too soon for them. And there's nobody else in the AFC who stands. I know some people like the Chargers. I like the Chargers better than a 4-12 team, but the Chargers are not going into Foxborough and beating that team.
Agreed.
So, you know, I think, and look, I don't factor in the NFC when you talk about the Chiefs because if they, you know, play a meaningful game against the NFC, they'll be in the Super Bowl, and at that point, anybody can win. But I would put the Chiefs overall right around, you know, the sixth best team in the NFL, and you could certainly move them up or down a few spots.
So there's a conversation that's been happening on Twitter over the last couple of days about what would happen if the Chiefs won tomorrow and what would happen to the public perception of them. There's a school of thought that says, you know, this makes this win tomorrow would make them a legit Super Bowl contender in the eyes of most. And there's a kind of a pushback to that that says, you know what, I don't have any questions about what the Chiefs can do in the regular season. I'm going to have doubts, and everyone's going to rightfully have doubts until there are playoff victories against teams that are on their level or above. Where do you land in that? What would you be looking how would you be looking at this team differently if they win tomorrow?
I won't look at them differently at all. I won't look at them differently whether they win by a point, lose by a point, or the score is 30 points in either direction. Because I said the same thing last year, and they were blown out by Pittsburgh. And they were, you know, they were 2-2 going to a bye, and a lot of people were writing them off. Look, it's one game. If they go, let's put it this way. A couple of years ago, when they dominated New England and blew them out, everybody started throwing dirt on New England. How'd that season end up? I think ultimately we all have to just take a step back and say, it's one game. What if the Chiefs go into this game and Tyreek Hill goes crazy in the return game and the Chiefs score two special teams or defensive touchdowns and they win the game? It doesn't mean that the Chiefs would beat them again in January.
Right.
It means that the Chiefs beat them on September 7th. I think the Chiefs are a very good team. I think they're going to win 11 or 12 games, and I think that no matter what happens tomorrow night, my opinion of that, barring catastrophic injuries, is not going to change.
And I think that the answer is somewhere in that. And I also could say that I could have myself nudged one direction or another depending on the way that the win came around. If Alex Smith went out there and was just dealing to Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce against the Patriots defense that had all this time to prepare, I would begin to get off of my skeptic soapbox a little bit. So with that being said, that shows where I have the most doubts, I guess, about this team. Where do you look at this roster, at this organization, and see your biggest concern right now?
I think no question it's offensively. Defensively, if this team's healthy, I think they're a really good defense. I think they're a top five level defense. The Nelson thing concerns me a little bit. Actually, it's a lie. It concerns me more than a little bit, but I think if the rest of the guys stay healthy around them, like Peters and Berry and even Mitchell, who I'm high on, I think the Chiefs will be okay. Offensively, is the concern, and for me, it's Alex Smith. He's never been a guy who's been able to throw for more than 3,600 yards. He rarely throws for more than 20 touchdowns in a season. And if it was 1995, that would be great. He'd be a pro bowler. But it's not 1995. It's 2017. And he having those statistics hurts them. And, yes, in the regular season, he's proven they can win a ton of games with him, and that's great. His issues aren't going to hurt them in October. They're going to hurt him in January, and of course, this year is different because last year you had Nick Foles on the bench, and people said, well, look, Nick Foles is probably not better than Alex Smith. You have a guy on the bench right now who maybe he's not better than Alex Smith right now, or maybe he throw for 4,200 yards as a rookie,
right?
And people are going to be asking that question if Alex Smith tomorrow throws for 180 yards.
I realized that we haven't had as much Patrick Mahomes conversation as I would like for us to have. So to the audience who is sick of the Patrick Mahomes talk, please forgive me. But Matt, where are you right now with the present and the future of Patrick Mahomes?
Present, look, he's ahead of where I thought he would be, and I was really high on Patrick Mahomes going into the draft before the Chiefs took him. I thought it was a home run pick. And after watching him in the preseason, I think his development's been everything you could possibly want. I think the Chiefs internally would tell you that it's even better than they thought it was going to be at this juncture. Brett Veach mentioned that in his presser a week ago.
Yep.
I don't think that he's the better option this second, only because I think even as good as he's looked, he's a rookie, and he will throw you out of some games that you should win. And I think Alex Smith in the regular season will not do that. And typically, while he won't win you games, that's kind of the quarterback that you're going to want to get to 11 or 12 wins as opposed to Mahomes, who may throw for 400 yards 1 week and 190 the next for three picks. That said, the future, I think, is incredibly bright. If he could develop that quickly with a second-string line in the preseason,
yeah.
I mean, you look at the talent that he put on display against Tennessee.
It's incredible.
Those throws, I don't care who you're facing, those are unique throws. And yes. I think if you're, you're a Chiefs fan, you should be thrilled with what you saw at him.
This is a conversation I had throughout the preseason, and then I was going to put to bed, but I want to just get your thoughts on it before we really leave Patrick Mahomes for a full calendar year, or until Alex Smith throws for 200 yards in a big game. Whichever comes first, I have a feeling it's going to be the latter. But I'm curious for what you know about quarterbacks, what you've seen from Mahomes, and quarterback development. What do you think Patrick Mahomes can learn from a year behind Alex Smith in that Andy Reid offense?
I think it's much more mental than it is physical what he's going to learn from Alex Smith. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to learn how to be a professional. And I don't mean to be, full of cliches, but it's just in terms of what to look for on tape, mm-hmm. how to study, how to prepare, how to get everything out of each rep in practice. This is a different deal. This isn't Texas Tech. This is the NFL. And, I think Alex Smith, say what you want about him, he's been a good, successful quarterback for a dozen years in this league. I think he can learn a lot mentally. Physically, I think, he's superior physically to Alex Smith. I think maybe you learn a little bit about pocket presence and things like that. But, to speak to what you said really briefly, I don't think Mahomes will play this year, but I could definitely see a scenario. If, let's say, the Chiefs are 5-4 at the bye week,
yeah.
and Smith is having a very mundane year, I could see the Chiefs saying, we're going with this kid. If he looks really good in practice and saying, our schedule the last 7 games of the year is very easy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we just roll with him. And I don't think that's going to happen. But if Smith gets off to a slow start, I could see the Chiefs at least entertaining the idea.
I could too. And I think the most realistic way of Patrick Mahomes taking this job over at some point is if he's Dak Prescott to Alex Smith's poor man's Tony Romo. Because Alex Smith has a history of missing a game or two here or there, and that's to be expected. I think we will see Patrick Mahomes on the field at some point because of that. What if Mahomes goes out there and deals against... I mean, it's different, I guess, if it's against the Jets or if it's against the Steelers, but either way, if Mahomes goes out there and deals, then you're having those conversations, and the city's just going to melt down.
Right. I think if you're Alex Smith, you don't want to get hurt this year.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I agree that is one scenario. Let's say he sprains an ankle or something, and they go into Houston on a Sunday night, for example.
That's a good call.
And Patrick Mahomes throws for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, and it looks unbelievable. That's going to be all that the Chiefs need to say, Alex isn't quite ready this coming week.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to play him again.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it a million times in the NFL. You don't want to leave the door open for a guy who's got that kind of talent.
This is a good place to jump back to another question I wanted to ask you, is that what will Alex Smith be this season? If you have to put your forecaster goggles on here, what is he going to put up this year?
Oh, I think he's going to be the same guy he's been for a decade now.
Yeah.
I say probably more of a half decade, because he's been a much better quarterback since he met up with Jim Harbaugh. But look, I think ultimately with Smith, if you're looking for statistics, he's probably going to be right around 3,600 yards. I'll say 19 to 22 touchdowns, right in that range, 9 picks, and he'll rush for 300 yards or so, something like that. I don't think it's and he'll be accurate. He'll complete 2/3 of his passes. I don't think you're going to get any kind of miracle. I know some people have talked about, with Mahomes behind him, he's going to be much more aggressive. No, he's not. He's not wired that way.
Mm-hmm.
He might be a little more aggressive because he's Tyreek Hill. But he's not going to be dropping back against New England tomorrow night and saying to himself, I better throw deep because Patrick would.
Right, right,
That's not the way it works.
Of course. Yes, I agree with you 100% on that. You said 11 or 12 wins. I'm collecting record predictions. Where are you going to land on that? I can't put 11.5. Unless you want to predict a tie, which would be pretty cool.
I will predict... you got me in the spot. I'll go 11-5. And I think they'll win the division. I think they're the best team in that division. I still think, frankly, by a fairly considerable margin,
mm-hmm.
Until Oakland can stop anybody, I just don't believe in the Raiders. I think 11-5. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they're a two seed again. I think they're going to be in play for that. I certainly think 12 wins is possible, and that's including me believing that tomorrow night's going to be a tall order. So I think the Chiefs are right where they always are. They've won, you know, in 4 years with Andy Reid, they've won 11 or more games three times. So I think that's probably where you're going to find them again.
What about the rest of the AFC West?
I think the Raiders are about a 9-win team. I think the Chargers are about an 8-win team. And I think Denver is a 6-7-win team.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about tomorrow. Go ahead and give me now. We're running out of time. These shows aren't long enough. I know we have at least one guy on Twitter who disagree, but we should just have an extra hour. We should just go one more hour tonight. Give me a final score for tomorrow. It's mean and it's unfair, but I'm getting it from all of you so I can make fun of you tomorrow.
I think New England's going to win 27-21. I think it's a game where the Chiefs are in it. I don't think they get blown out. I think it's the kind of game where we'll be all looking up at the sky Friday morning and thinking if they hadn't just taken that penalty or they hadn't had that one drop pass, yeah, they could have won.
I agree.
But I think ultimately the difference will be that the Chiefs just don't make those winning plays late in the game that New England does. I think the Chiefs have the chance. I really do. I think the Chiefs are good enough to go in there and beat them if they play their best game. But I think that's a tall order in a very tough place to play.
I'm right there with you every step of that. Matt Verderam, he's at Matt Verderam on Twitter. He's the NFL lead writer for FanSided. He has the Stacked in the Box podcast. As always, good to catch up with you, Matt. And I'm sure you'll be hearing from us again very, very soon.
All right, you too, Josh. Take care.
Matt Verderam, go follow him on Twitter. Go listen to his podcast. You probably are already, but you should be doing it. Do it twice. You know what? Go download his podcast two times. He can't be the most annoying guy you've listened to today.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
I don't know if today was a really good show or a really trash one.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Welcome back to the show. Did you see that Donald Trump said we're the most highly taxed nation in the world? That's not true. Back to the Chiefs. Just a lot of ridiculous stuff going on. I was on Twitter for like an hour this morning. Just like I was laying in bed staring at my phone for really an hour might be a little much. But like 30 or 45 minutes. Just scrolling and finding something else absurd. Like Jason Whitlock in an apron holding a football standing next to a white guy dressed up as Colin Kaepernick with an afro, a fake beard, and a black glove around his raised fist. That was like the second or third most absurd thing. Bryce Harper has cornrows. Bryce Harper has cornrows. I forgot that happened. It just showed up on SportsCenter in front of me. I was going to screenshot that, and I ended up getting distracted by the fact that like that Paul Ryan had changed his opinion on something like 3 days apart. It's just too much. There was just too much on Twitter this morning, and there's too much on Twitter all the time. But today was nuts. There's like 1,000 things going on politically. I saw an article on CNN pop up that Trump made a deal with Democrats on something having to do with spending for like hurricane relief funding. And that was weird, and all of it's all weird. Everything that's going on is weird. Beards, will you make sure that Charlie's not talking into the podcast feed? Thank you. Beards and Charlie are both still here, but I think Charlie's been trying to figure out like how to, his warranty for his computer. Do you have an HP? Just not. If you, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm at a place now where I've had a problem with every technology company on the planet, but I had a Dell computer, I had an HP computer, I've had Samsung phones and LG phones that have all given me a very bad time. My Acer Chromebook has been stupendous, though. Not a sponsor. Hashtag not a sponsor.
Yeah, someone from across the world currently has control of my computer right now, and he's trying to troubleshoot it, so that's fun.
I hope you gave him a fake social security number.
Of course.
The phrase, somebody on the other side of the world has my has control of my computer right now, that's a problematic sentence. That concerns me for you. Oh, the show's over. Oh, okay. That's fine. Today went by pretty quick. We had that weird first segment and then three interviews and then I was annoying somewhere in there. No offense. And the Chiefs play a football game. Tomorrow! Chiefs football starts tomorrow! They're probably going to lose tomorrow. But we'll talk about it more tomorrow! In fact, tomorrow we're going to have Matt Derrick from Chiefs Digest and Brandon Kiley from 101 ESPN in St. Louis. We'll ask both of those guys all of the Chiefs questions that we can possibly ask two men in a 30-minute span each. And I will stop holding out. I will answer all of the questions that I've been asking of all of these guys. I'll let you know the record. I'll let you know the score of tomorrow's game. Don't worry. I'll be there for you. Annoyingly. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.